Advisement. We move to the sixth case today, Collins versus Astute.
May it please the court. My name is Bill Jenner. I'm an attorney from Madison, Indiana, and I represent Peggy Collins on this appeal of a Social Security disability case. This is the third time I've appeared before this court in recent years because in cases involving a particular ALJ, the same ALJ that decided this case. And in all those cases, in my opinion, the ALJ has failed to apply the correct legal standard on some closely related issues. The Gudgell case, which this court decided and is published, was decided and reversed because the ALJ had improperly applied the treating physician rule. Recently, Oakes, which is also in my brief and attached to my appendix, was reversed by the same ALJ because he gave no weight to the opinion of a treating physician on the issue of RFC because he was under the mistaken impression that RFC was at all times exclusively reserved to the commissioner and therefore the ALJ. The ALJ has committed the same error again in Mrs. Collins' case. On page 10 of his decision, A28 in the appendix, he discusses the limitations on functional capacity imposed by the treating physician and then says, and I quote, "It is difficult to afford his opinions any significant weight, particularly on issues reserved to the commissioner." Again, on page 9 of the decision, appendix 27, after discussing the opinions of two other physicians that Collins would have great difficulty standing and walking, he notes again, "It should be noted," and again I quote, the claimant's functional capacity is an issue that, comma, in all instances, is reserved to the commissioner. The appellee, in its brief, admits five times that there was an error in this area. It calls it a minor error, a slight error, a mistake, says the ALJ went astray. And then the appellee argues that if it had been a conclusory opinion by the treating physician, it would have been spot on. The ALJ would have been spot on, whatever that means. But the fact is, it wasn't a conclusory opinion. These opinions of all three of these doctors were opinions on Collins' functional capacity, her ability to sit and stand and work. The treating physician evidence in this case was very strong and consistent. Dr. Olson was a treating orthopedic surgeon. He opined in 2004 that Collins could lift only 5 pounds and needed to sit 90% of the time. That opinion would eliminate sedentary work because sedentary work requires the ability to stand and walk 2 hours out of 8, which would be 75% of the time. Also, it requires the ability to lift more than 5 pounds. He later opined that she could work only 6 hours out of an 8-hour day. Both those opinions are consistent. They eliminate sedentary work. It also was the opinion of a specialist who had evaluated Collins on 22 occasions between 2003 and 2006, was backed up by x-rays, MRIs, and other objective tests. The opinion was also consistent with all the physicians after December 6, 2003, except for two state agency physicians, and those opinions were clearly rejected by the ALJ in his reasoning. He said he did not credit them because they didn't review all the evidence and they didn't hear the testimony of the medical expert who he brought to the hearing. The opinion was consistent with the treating physician Mason on June 8, 2004, at transcript 156, where he said, "cannot stand for more than 1 hour daily," eliminating again sedentary work. It was consistent with Dr. Ali, a consultative examiner, on 12-6-2003. Ali said, "not able to stand or walk at least 2 hours in an 8-hour day," another requirement for sedentary work. Most importantly, it was consistent with the opinion of the medical expert who was brought to the hearing. And he was also an orthopedic. And I'll quote from the transcript. "The ALJ, did you see that opinion from Dr. Olson?" The medical expert says, "yes, sir, I have it right in front of me." The ALJ said, "is it, in your opinion, a reasonable functional capacity?" The ME said, "yes, sir." The ALJ said, based on the medical evidence. The ME said, based on the medical evidence. Appellee now argues that we should assume that the ME was relying on the ALJ's obviously mistaken interpretation that Dr. Olson's RFC was for a full range of sedentary work. I believe a more logical assumption is that the medical expert, an orthopedic surgeon, can read. He had it, as he said, right in front of him, and he could read the limitation of 4 hours sitting and agreed that it was reasonable, thereby eliminating sedentary work. This case should be reversed and benefits awarded. There is virtually no evidence in the record after December 6, 2003, that Collins could perform even sedentary work. And certainly, the ALJ did not build any logical bridge to deny benefits after that date, December 6, 2003. The only medical evidence he had was back in 2002 that he relied on of any substantial merit. So I believe this case needs to be reversed and benefits awarded. This ALJ is making the same mistake over and over again, and somebody's got to explain the law to them.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Guerin.
May it please the court, James Guerin for the commissioner. This case turns on essentially a single piece of evidence, and in fact, it turns on a single finding of Dr. Olson in his July 2006 form, in which he indicated that Ms. Collins was limited to sitting for 4 hours. The ALJ's decision is consistent with the doctor's opinion otherwise. The ALJ, by finding that Ms. Collins could perform sedentary work, implicitly found that she could sit for at least 6 hours. So the question before the court is whether there's substantial evidence to support the ALJ's finding that Ms. Collins could sit for 2 hours longer than Dr. Olson indicated in the form. Ms. Collins presents basically two arguments. The first one is a legal argument. She argues that the ALJ incorrectly found that he could reject the limitations set forth by a doctor because those are addressing an issue reserved to the commissioner. As we discussed in our brief, we agree with that point. The ALJ's statement on that point was incorrect. However, if you look at the actual decision, that's not what the ALJ was relying on. It's an incorrect statement of the law, but what the ALJ said in his decision was that he was rejecting the doctor's findings on sitting. That's on page 28 of the appendix, on the top of the page. He said he was rejecting them because they were inconsistent with the doctor's opinions were internally inconsistent. 2 years earlier, he said that Ms. Collins was required to sit 90% of the time, and then in 2006, he said that she couldn't sit for more than 4 hours. He also pointed out that there was no other evidence that she complained about a need to not to sit. There actually is no evidence in the record, aside from Dr. Olson's opinion, of a sitting limitation. That was the reason that...
What's your point, then, that she could sit for a longer period of time and do sedentary work?
Yes, my point is that substantial evidence supports the ALJ's implicit finding that she could sit for 6 hours. The record is truly remarkable for the lack of any evidence on a requirement that she limit her sitting. In fact, every doctor who discussed the issue, who was asked to address it, or who volunteered an opinion, we see limitations on standing, but Dr. Bird in a form that he completed, indicated that there were no significant limitations on sitting. The state agency doctors indicated no significant limitations on sitting. Now, the ALJ's main reason for rejecting the state agency doctors was that they indicated that Ms. Collins could perform light work, lifting and carrying 20 pounds and 10 pounds. And the ALJ said that doesn't make sense because they said she also needs to use an assistive device to walk. And so he rejected their opinions on that basis. Now, Ms. Collins' second argument is that the ALJ relied on the medical expert's testimony to find that Ms. Collins could perform sedentary work, but she contends that the medical expert actually testified to the contrary, supporting Dr. Collins' limitations. I ask you to, if you look at the actual transcript hearing at pages 613 to 614, the ALJ clearly, this is an issue of misapprehension. The ALJ clearly says, Dr. Olson's form represents sedentary work. The medical expert's next statement is correct. They were both wrong. They were both mistaken. And by the time the ALJ reached the point where he was writing the decision, he understood that that wasn't sedentary work indicated in Dr. Olson's form because of the limitation on standing. Again, the ALJ explained very clearly, though, there's no problem with building the bridge to the ALJ's decision here. He explained very clearly that he was rejecting that limitation on sitting because it was inconsistent with Dr. Olson's earlier opinion and it was inconsistent with the rest of the record. It was unsupported by the record. There's no indication that anyone limited her to sitting 4 hours, and in fact there's no indication that she even complained about it. In fact, when she did make statements in the record, she typically said that she needed to sit. She had problems with standing. That's consistent also with the fact that she had serious problems with her knees, which the ALJ recognized and limited her accordingly. For these reasons, we believe that the substantial evidence strongly supports the ALJ's decision, and we ask the court to affirm the commissioner's decision.
Thank you, Mr. Curran.
Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Jenner have? 1.5 minutes per rebuttal.
That's real fast. Several things. Number one, sedentary work requires not only the ability to sit 6 hours, but you have to be able to stand and walk for 2 hours. And there's a lot of evidence here that she cannot stand and walk for more than 1 hour and certainly cannot work a six-hour day, according to Olson. You got to remember, her knee problems are a progressive disease. And SSR 96-2P and the law does not require absolute consistency of all medical evidence. You're not going to have that in a progressive disease. Yeah, Olson in 2004 may have made one thing, which still eliminated sedentary work. And he may have changed that slightly in 2006, but in both opinions, he eliminated sedentary work. And, of course, it was rejected because he said we can't give any credit because that issue is reserved to the commissioner. That's the mistake he made before. That's why Oates got him reversed. The Byrd RFC that he talked about was in 2002. I'm urging here a onset date of December 6, 2003, because that was when Dr. Ali said that she clearly could not do sedentary work. Mason, another doctor, was also 2002, and the ALJ forgot to put in, even though he said no limitations on sitting, he added she has to elevate her feet many hours of the day. Well, that, I think we all know, affects the ability to do a sit-down job. So To me, this is a case where there just is not substantial evidence to support the ALJ, certainly not after January 6, 2003. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.